Hello, good evening and welcome. Well, the dust is finally settling over the craziness that rocked the gold and silver markets on Friday and Monday this week. Unprecedented changes in the prices that had gone up so sharply and then fell like a stone. We're also starting to understand, though, what really caused this volatility and indeed the crash that we saw earlier. Our mining guru, Peter Major, explains that this time round, it wasn't the Texans, Nelson Bunker Hunt and co, who made it happen, as they had in the 1980s. It was the Chinese, including a fellow by the name of Mr. Hat.
I heard there's quite a few Bunker Hunts, and they're all in China.
Okay.
And it was the Chinese Future Exchange that increased the margin 80%. And everyone
Explain what that means.
The Chinese COMEX exchange. So say you want to go long a silver bullion bar, and that bar is worth $100. And generally, you have to put down 10%. That's your margin. So whatever it moves, you have to make up that move the next day. If you don't make up that move the next day, as a safety margin, they close you out immediately. Well, they decided, we have to increase the margins, which is not unusual. Whenever something goes crazy, margin increases are relatively normal. They don't happen that often, but they're not abnormal. So apparently the Chinese Commodities Exchange increased margins on gold, silver, and copper by 80%, which means almost double. So if you were investing and you're managing your money, you say, I'm going to go long and I got enough for a margin call. But if the next day you're told you have to double the margin, maybe you can't make it, or maybe you don't want to make it. Doesn't matter. That panicked everybody much more than Mr. Trump's appointment for Federal Reserve, Mr. Walsh. That may have helped do it, but I think it was mainly the margin requirement, just being out of the clear blue sky. And yeah, there's a few Bunker Hunts. The Chinese love gambling. They love speculating. And they were the ones that were really pushing this from 90 to 100 to 110, 120. It wasn't Joe Doakes in Johannesburg in New York. It was the Chinese. And they are looking for a Mr. Hat. Apparently, Mr. Hat was taking the biggest positions, and he owes over $150 million of unpaid margin to a lot of brokers. They think Mr. Hat has left China. He'd better have left. I don't know how real Mr. Hat is, but the things I'm reading and people I'm talking to say he was probably one of the big protagonists. But that's what I believe brought it down, Alec. It may have been accelerated by Mr. Trump's appointment of Mr. Walsh, but I think it was the margin requirement increase, which is along the lines of what happened in 1980 to the Hunt brothers.
Well, here's some good news for all of us. According to Donald Trump, the detente between the US and China is gathering momentum. There are going to be two meetings between him and his Chinese counterpart, Mr. Xi, this year. Here's our partners at Bloomberg.
What did you talk about with the leader of China?
About a lot of topics. We talked.
What's
about
the most
so
important
much?
Topic? Is it chips? Is it the wars in Ukraine? What is
I mean,
going on?
I would say the economy, the relationship that we have with China. I'm going to be going there in April. Then he's coming here toward the end of the year.
Coming to the White House?
He's coming to the White House, yeah. Toward the end of the year. We have a very good relationship. And you know, it's important that I have a good relationship, and for him that he has a good relationship with me. We have to have a good. These are the two most powerful countries in the world.
Let's bring in Minmin Lo now, our China correspondent. On, you know, we've gotten the readouts from both sides here. Overall, how do they differ? What's the same? How are they aligned?
Yeah, I would say just judging from that interview alone, it sounds like President Trump has confirmed that Xi is going to come. Xi is going to come to visit the White House before the end of the year, which to me sounds like a stabilization of relations. Right, this is the standard playbook for a functional relationship. He goes to visit China, and then China he returns the favor, and President Xi comes to visit. So in terms of the readout from both sides, Trump posted on Truth Social a very positive tone there. He says that his personal relationship with President Xi is, quote, extremely good. He talked about a range of issues, everything from geopolitics, Taiwan, Iran, Ukraine, to trade, right? Just now in the interview, he mentioned the economy is the number one issue for the U.S. And those agricultural pledges from China came through. 20 million tons of soybean purchases this harvest and 25 million for the next harvest. And they discussed oil and gas purchase as well. But when it comes to China, the readout didn't mention any of these issues except Taiwan. That was specifically mentioned as the number one, the most important issue in U.S.-China relations, and saying that China will never allow Taiwan to be separated from China, and warning the U.S. that they need to exercise a lot of caution, especially when it comes to arms sales to Taiwan.
Yeah, and I guess that's the real red line for Beijing. What else happened for President Xi? Because, of course, he had another call, but this one was with President Putin instead.
Yeah, just hours ago, he had a 1.5-hour long video call. I mean, I don't even have that long a call with my best friends. But, yeah, clearly very close friends, talking for an hour and a half video call. And, again, if you look at the readouts, very short one, but it really shows you that the two sides are presenting this very united front, right, at a time when there's a lot of uncertainty, a lot of turbulence in global markets. There is, you know, the Iran crisis going on. And of course, Russia and China are both aligned in seeing Iran as this linchpin in the Middle East to counterbalance against the U.S. So no surprise that they also had a very long call just ahead of that call with President Trump to align their stance on how to deal with the U.S. And China also committing to continue to open up its economy to Russia as well.
The hemorrhaging of young talent from South Africa to the rich North is, well, something that we've got used to. It's not just us. It happens elsewhere in SADC, Australia, New Zealand, and other countries as well, where the young people go abroad, go to rich countries to, well, learn a little, and then most cases bring home some capital and their experience and thankfully their talent. But for South Africans, there are blockages that need not be there. And this was the topic of conversation between my colleague Linda van Tilburg and immigration tax specialist William Lowe of Sable.
The problem is that the way SARS and the Reserve Bank have structured their systems, it's basically forcing people or individuals who leave the country to actually consider liquidating everything because it becomes too painful going forward to work with the two departments and leave assets behind. Which is a big problem, and I think it'll damage the economy.
Can you take us through the steps that somebody needs to take if they are immigrated?
So the first thing you need to look at is you need to tax immigrate out of South Africa, which is the application with SARS, where you tell SARS, I've left on X date. These are the assets when I've left. I pay my exit tax. I then get a letter from SARS confirming that I'm a non-tax resident, which will then change that. SARS is aware that they've got limited taxing rights from my worldwide income streams and assets to my South African sourced income streams and assets. So that's all fine. One of the complications with SARS, however, is that they don't fully understand the difference between tax immigration via ordinarily residence, physical presence, or the double taxation agreement. They seem to think that all of them are once-off effects, which is not the case. Each one has their own aspect in the law. And a double taxation agreement is only applicable where South Africa would see you as tax resident under local legislation, as well as the other country sees you as tax resident under their legislation. And then the governments have agreed to say, although we each see them as tax resident, we will now decide who's going to be the tax dominant country and the other one defaults to a non-resident. So it's easier to manage your tax affairs. So for somebody who relies on the double taxation agreement, they have to evaluate annually whether their tax status has changed from or to South Africa, and it can change year on year by a simple decision, which, you don't forecast, and then suddenly you find that you've changed your tax status without intention with all its effects. And that's a big problem from the SARS side. The Reserve Bank, in their opinion, have decided that although they're meant to be controlling foreign exchange for South African residents under home affairs, that they're bringing in the tax terms in to play. So basically what they say is that if you have a South African ID and living in South Africa, you exchange control resident. If you have a foreign passport but are living in South Africa and have residency to stay in South Africa, then we'll see you as a resident and allow you to utilize the same banking system. But now they've added the extra complexity to say that if you've tax immigrated out of South Africa, even if you're a South African ID holder, we will see you as a non-resident for exchange control, which basically means you have to convert all your bank accounts to non-resident bank accounts. You lose access to certain allowances, and it gets very confusing. Now, the biggest problem with this aspect is that if you tax immigrate under the double taxation agreement, under local laws, you're still a tax resident, but SARS says that you're a non-tax resident, which means the bank is going to change you to a non-resident, restrict your allowances, while you still have intention to stay in South Africa and still have a lot of assets in South Africa, which makes life very difficult.
Michelle's a mom who traded in her Fiat 500 for this beast right here. But why the momentous move, huh?
I needed something bigger to keep up with my growing son in his mini sports bags.
When you traded in your car with We Buy Cars, was it an easy conversion?
I see what you did there. The process was just so easy. I was given a tablet, had to sign, and that was it.
Basically, We Buy Cars is no mess, no fuss. Okay, it was nice chatting. We Buy Cars, the easiest way to sell your car by far.
We've been learning a lot this week from Cathy Wood, the CEO of ARK Invest. Here's her final contribution. She tells us where investors are putting their money.
Well, we have had, year to date, I think our ETFs have roughly $1 billion in inflows, heavily skewed to space exploration and defense for obvious reasons. And then autonomous technology and robotics. I think that autonomous taxis and drones, very big parts of that fund as well. And then our flagship strategy is also starting to inflow. It had been held down by the multi-omics theme. So this is what we used to call the genomic revolution. And it was a very difficult space, even though the innovation was taking place, the investment markets were not interested in it for a couple of reasons. One, lots of investment necessary, therefore not very high, if any, cash flows, and the cash cushions needed to be built up. We think they've done a lot in the last few years to become more efficient. And so we're beginning to see outperformance from that space as well, because now many people are beginning to understand we're seeing cures to disease. We're seeing early diagnosis thanks to AI and sequencing technologies.
Just 30 seconds, though. What's your best idea, you think, for 2026 at this point? And I know there's a lot in your research, but is there a best idea or narrative, just quickly, if you could?
So the top three stocks in our flagship are Tesla. We think it has miles to go. We do take profits from time to time, but it could break out here in a big way as more and more analysts do their homework on robo-taxis. Hmm. CRISPR Therapeutics has moved into the second position. That company is curing sickle cell disease and beta thalassemia and has its eyes set on not just rare diseases, but curing the bad cholesterol problem, especially for those who have hereditary issues in that realm. That could be an enormous market, and I don't think anyone is doing the modeling work there the way we are.
Thank you for joining us for the briefing. We'll be back again on Monday. Cheerio.